Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
What's going on?
It's Friday.
It's Friday in December. It's
Friday in December. That's right.
I feel like we talked ourselves out for 2 hours on Upgrade on Monday.
We had a lot to talk about.
If you like this podcast, you should listen to this week's Upgrade because it's us talking for 2 hours. If you want like four of these.
We did the binge instead of the weekly drop is what we did.
Yeah, except we're here again, so... Next, bye everybody. No, that was fun. I had a good time. That was we do this on a regular basis. It was I often stress out because I'm talking to people I don't normally talk to, and
sure.
It adds this whole other layer.
You gotta manage,
and I just didn't even the stress just never appeared talking to you because we do this. So yeah, that was good.
Yes,
yeah, thank you for being there.
No, it's a delight. I was delighted to be back. I enjoy the show, listening to the show so much. So it's nice to be on it.
Right over there. Except with no mic. So.
Except with no mic. Next time you go on vacation, I'll drop in on mic.
I see. Okay. Well, just let him know. That's going to happen. Yeah.
Do I have to?
No. Just surprise him.
He can roll with the punches.
It is December, and this is the podcast where we do some
talk
inside
about four tech topics
inside
with, no, wait,
business.
Nope.
this is the inside backstage whatever. So I'll just say again, not a lot going on. I started a Google Doc that maybe a post will go up today. I hope so. Where we start our favorite things of the year. A classic, a perennial. An annual, if you will.
I every time this happens, and this happens over when we do this on The Incomparable, too.
Yes.
I tell myself every year I should remember the things that I like because by December you're like, oh God, especially the last year, you're like, what happened this year?
Oh.
And so I'm bad at keeping lists of those things. So when I was starting to think about what was the best stuff from this year, I was like racking my brains and like checking. Like it's easier for some things than others, like books and movies and TV shows. I actually keep track of those now.
Yeah.
But things like software or hardware, like hardware products. Okay. Sometimes I can kind of dig out what I had, what I added or what I was using it a lot. But like software, I also find my software situation doesn't change dramatically year to year. I use new apps, but I don't use a lot and very few stick, right? Like I might try a lot of apps, but apps that end up in sort of the regular rotation or end up being something that really fixes a problem I have, they seem to be fewer and farther between than they used to be.
Yeah. I always struggle with it. We do the upgrades on Upgrade every year and I struggle with it. This year I didn't struggle with it as much. This year was a pretty good software year. I feel like there was interesting stuff on the Mac and there was interesting stuff on iOS in a way that that I haven't experienced as much of the last few years. So, and obviously, for me, app stuff is all about me trying stuff out that I'm interested in. It's one of those things where I am very appreciative of the fact that Mac Stories especially has taken it upon themselves to basically be on the new app beat. But that's not a decision that either of us has made of like, I'm going to really dig into all these apps. It's just like, I'm going to do other stuff. That's not what I want to do generally, but it's kind of nice at the end of the year to have some stuff that I'm using or have used and appreciated during the year and be able to write those up a little bit because it always surprises me. Some of them I have written across the year. And then there are others where I'm like, I don't think I ever mentioned this thing. So that's also kind of fun to throw those in there. Yeah. Like broadcasts, I'm going to mention. I think I looked on the site. I don't think I've mentioned broadcasts on Six Colors at all. And I love it on all platforms. So I'm going to write that up. It's just a live stream. I mean, it'll internet radio basically, but I use it to listen to podcast live streams.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I think it's interesting because it does sort of help me codify like, all right, what have I been actually using and what do I like, what have I changed in my setups? But I like reading other people's end of the year lists too, because I find that I've missed stuff. Right. So
for
like
sure.
Looking through stuff that you've written about, I was like, oh, did I know about that app? Uh-huh. Should I get that app? Should I try that app out? I think that's always, it's always fun to find stuff that you are not familiar with. I think it was like Ars Technica or somebody, I don't remember, it might have been them, The Verge, I don't remember who, had a list of board games. And I was like, for years, I felt like the board games thing was like, I would scroll through these, and I'm like, I have played or know of 90% of these. And this year, I was going through a list. I was like, there are a lot of new games that I don't. And I was like, well, that's right, because I haven't been playing board games with people for like a year and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't see anybody. But they're still coming out. So, yeah, it's fun to find stuff that you know, you've missed out on. I enjoy that part of it.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I now see that we will post that story today because... you already wrote your three Mac apps.
I did.
So that's good. Send me some screenshots.
Yeah. Yes, I can do
sometime.
That.
Sometime. I don't know. Whatever. But yes, we're planning the post on the podcast. It happens. That's how it goes. Thank you to Shelley Brisbane, by the way, who wrote the members post this week about her smart laundry appliance, which tickled me because I also have an LG... a smart washer, and for me most of it is silly, but I do kind of love that my Apple Watch sends me a note when the washing machine cycle is over. I don't know, I think it's hilarious, and also it's useful because I don't have it making noise and it's in a room where the door is closed because it's usually on the weekend. So I mean, it's dumb when I'm sitting here and it finishes because I'm just like, I know, but on the weekend, it's very helpful to keep pushing it along. Anyway, she sent that in, having changed it from the pun all along the wash tower, because the name of the product is the wash tower, and I changed it back, not knowing she had originally thought that would be the title, but thought maybe it was too much. And then everybody in the member Slack assumed that it was you.
Well, I guess I have a reputation.
It is a good it's a good pun. You can't. I just can't.
It's pretty good. I wish that I had thought of that one myself, I'll tell you.
Anyway, smart appliances.
I know. You know what? I haven't written about the fact that I do have a smart... oh, boy. Sorry. Listeners of The Rebound will know that I will hesitate over the word range, stove, oven, because this week's bonus episode involved us talking a lot about what do you call these things? Mm. Anyways, yeah, I have a smart appliance that heats food. And
microwave.
It's... not that one, the other one. Air fryer, no. Toaster oven, no. And it was it's interesting. I don't know if it's good, and I don't know how useful it is, but it's intriguing that it exists as a feature set. So I will probably at some point have to mention that. I'm not sure I would make it to the best of list this year, but it is. I'm just starting to foray into the smart appliance market.
Apparently, you're going to love this. Apparently, the oven is just the enclosed space.
Oh, yeah. We had this entire conversation, complete with Googling. Yes, that I would agree, but I also still refer to it sometimes. The whole thing is just the oven. If I'm not really thinking about it, yeah, it's the oven.
There I know. Saying that it's a range that's just, first off, I it feels like a marketing term, and also I can't think of range without thinking of The Price is Right, because they would have to they would give away a range, and it would be this term, and I'd be like, range, what are they talking about? Because we never called our oven / stove a range. Range is for Bruce Hornsby, and that's all.
I feel like I hear gas range sometimes, but that's more than like an electric range.
Well, it's a range of gases, Dan. It starts with hydrogen and it moves all the way up through argon, and there's a whole range.
Can you cook with all those or
no?
Now we're cooking with argon.
Yeah, now we're cooking with a noble gas. The king's eggs can only be made with a noble gas.
Indeed, of course, yes, that's important. Yeah. Anyway, that's where...
So you do have a smart appliance, but you haven't written about it yet.
I do have a smart appliance, but I haven't written about it yet. Because it, for many reasons.
That's fair. I detailed on Upgrade my adventure getting a non-HomeKit device into my HomeBridge system via official means. And what I've learned this week, Dan, is that when the company has an official API... oftentimes they complicate it up a bit too much. So in this case, the maker of the white label smart outdoor switch with dimmer that I bought, they have their own thing, but you have to like log in and unlike so many of these other things, you've got to like log into their API system and create an app or a device and pair your device with it and then get the secret from that and put it in. It's all this technical stuff. And I posted a link to this dumb Python script I wrote about Google Calendar, and it was the same thing, which is the reason I did it. I've sort of gotten Google's official API to work, but I to do the Google Calendar script, you have to sign up for like a Google Cloud instance and put in this API, very specific stuff that they have to walk you through in order to get OAuth so that you can then run a script that then runs the authorization, which then runs the it's this whole chain. And so many of these things, like Slack, for instance, you know, you have to connect the dots and you have to get a shared secret, which you can turn off or regenerate or whatever is needed. But it's fairly straightforward. And then there are these places where in the name of security, they make it so like literally I decided to scrape some HTML off of a web page rather than use the official API because the official API was so daunting.
The official API, I feel like in most cases, it's really designed to be for people writing like apps.
Literally, the Google Calendar API, you have to say that you are an app, even though you're not. I mean,
that's
you're just a script.
It's increasingly common. Like I had the same thing for similar reasons to you. I was looking at the Twitter API, and that has similar problems where it's like you gotta authenticate and
sign up for a developer account.
Right, okay. Exactly. And you know, it's fine. You can do this in most cases without like it's complex because it's designed for more complex uses, which is why I think there are some services that have sort of, you know, popped up to mediate that.
So I had never heard of Integromat, which you showed me.
It was written up on six colors, Jason, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
I'm going to look right now because I'm pretty
too.
Sure.
Well, then
yes, literally a year ago.
Oh, well, I
wrote
I was asleep that day, obviously.
It was a member post.
Integromat. I do remember this. I guess it just passed me by.
Well, it's until you have a use for it, right? Like it's like,
well,
oh, that's
well, this
sure,
is,
whatever.
So I got in a rut where I was basically using If This Then That or Zapier, and Zapier I stopped using because they changed their model and they wanted to charge me. And the challenge with a lot of these things is like, I want to do a little thing, and they're like, great, that'll be $9 a month. And I'm like, for a little thing, like, is it enough for me to do this one little tiny thing? And a lot of times I just want to experiment with things. And oftentimes they have a free tier, but sometimes the free tier is not good enough. And, you know, it ends up being a thing where I'm like, I don't know if this really reaches the level where I want to commit to signing up for a service and then canceling if I don't want to keep using it. But but what I didn't realize is that Integromat has a lot of power that the other stuff I've tried doesn't have. And the
really
trick, when we talk about Google Calendar, you did some really nice Google Calendar stuff that replicated a lot of what I was doing. And the brilliance there is that Integromat is the company that has to integrate with the Google Calendar API, and they build that thing, and they are developers, and they build that thing and put a nice interface on it. And then we just get to use it, and that's better. That's better.
Yeah. No, I agree. I've used it, as I detailed last year, I used it for an extremely complex workflow, but it was something I only needed for a limited time, so I could like spin it up for a month.
Right.
And like give them, you know, $10 to $20 if I needed just more bandwidth, essentially. And then when that was over, it's just like, yep, just now cancel my account and I'll wait till next year.
It's very impressive. So we may end up, the Incomparable Incorporated may invest in an Integromat account, because I would, while it was a fun... So what I posted is a simplified version of what I actually wrote my Python script for, because I wanted a very specific thing that's checking Google Calendar to see if there's an event at a specific time so it can use that information. But then you showed me that you actually can do that in Integromat's integration, which is funny because the other Google Calendar app integrations I've seen are really stupid. It's actually, when we talk about shortcuts and how they're like, there aren't enough actions in shortcuts and it gets frustrating and there weren't enough actions in Automator, that's how I felt about, especially, I grant you, it's been a few years, the early days of If This Then That and of Zapier, where it felt like if you needed a thing to that was very specific, they'd be like, no, we don't do that with Google Calendar. We only do like make an event.
These actions. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. Well, but I don't need that. I need to find an event within a range of time and see if it exists. And but it looks like IntegraMAT actually does that too. So well, somebody ought to write a post about IntegraMAT, Dan.
Well, I was thinking about putting it in my favorite things of the year. Maybe I should do that.
Hey.
I mean, the thing with If This Then That was always that it was extremely limited down to like, it was literally one trigger, one
no
action.
Logic. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, and it's like, that is fine if you're doing something super simple, but right. Now a lot of other services handle stuff like built in. So Shortcuts, for example, you can get away with, you know, doing some of the things I used to use If This Then That for. Zapier was better, and we used to use that for some of the things I'm now using IntegraMAT for, but I actually think their interface was kind of irritating. And I just got frustrated with it. And then I was looking around for other options, and they did, I think it was part of it was like you, I was looking for a feature set that didn't exist in Zapier where it was something like, I need this service, but I want to interact with it in this way. And it's like, nope, you can only do these three things. I was like, those are not the things I need.
I know. It's so frustrating. Yeah. That's what happens when you're relying on you know, somebody else's decisions about how they're going to build their integration. And a lot of times I think what happens is it's the age of the thing, right? That sometimes, mm-hmm. sometimes the reason that IntegraMAT may be better than Zapier for some stuff is because it's, I don't know this for sure, but maybe it was built later. And sometimes that happens where things that we built our integration. What are you talking about? It's like, well, you should improve it.
Update it. Yeah.
And they don't because they've moved on. Apple does this with, that was Federico's complaint about Shortcuts, is that Apple does that. They built Notes integration 2 years ago and they've added a bunch of functionality since then, and they haven't updated the Shortcuts actions for the new functionality. Not great. So maybe that's a factor here. But the great thing about these services is they let you do, especially without writing a Python script that scrapes HTML. Scraping, you know, if you were in the on the web in the early days, scraping is the way to go. Who needs an API?
It's the only option.
I mean, my argument would be that Google should probably, for a public calendar, Google should probably just offer it in a JSON format so that...
Yeah, I'm surprised you can't grab...
It's literally public. I don't know why you need to do an API to read a public calendar. It's stupid. But anyway, most people are not going to do that. And so these services are kind of brilliant in that they let you say, like, when this happens and it's like in Google Sheets, then I want you to check Google Calendar and get a variable. And then I want you... It's basically Shortcuts, but it's all for things that are in web services. I would argue, by the way, that Shortcuts could also do this. And... Yes. That would be kind of cool. Like,
I don't know if Apple wants to.
Yeah, I know, but an app could build.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is you want something like what's that one? Toolbox.
Yeah, like Toolbox Pro.
Like, yeah, something like that where you just build in all the APIs. Yeah,
yeah, and say Google, cool. All the Google apps are now in here, and so if you buy Toolbox Pro for Mac, you get now the Google APIs are all in there, so you can write Shortcuts that will pull things out of a spreadsheet because you can do that. Like. It's just not in there, but you can absolutely do that.
It's nice.
Yeah, I did actually. I'm going to write this up at some point. Related to my post yesterday, one of the funny things that I have to do sometimes is run a shell script, or an executable of some kind on a remote server. And again, this is a little esoteric, but these Python scripts that I write, you know, sometimes I need to check them out or I need to kick them and say, you know, I know you only run every day, but I need you to run right now so I can see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I would open terminal and SSH to the server and then run the command, switch to the directory and run the command and then exit and all of that. And I realize Shortcuts on iOS and Mac has a run SSH action. And so now I have all of those scripts that I occasionally do. I just got them in my menu bar as Shortcuts. And it's a one-step action that says do this SSH command on that server. And it totally works. And it's another one of those things where it's like, are there lots of other ways you could script that on the Mac? Sure, but it's just one item in Shortcuts. It could not be easier to do. And sometimes that's what makes something great. It's not that there aren't alternatives to it. It's that this is the lowest friction version that you could possibly imagine. And I love it.
Yeah, no, it definitely is nice to find an automated solution where you can do stuff really really kind of easily. I ended up writing a Discord bot recently for a ridiculous purpose, and that also required like learning some Python and cobbling together stuff. And I was like, there's probably, in retrospect, I'm thinking back now, I was like, I wonder if I could have done that in Integromat.
Yeah,
probably.
But there's something. This is when I talk about using Automator and AppleScript and stuff like that every day. The truth is, what I did is I wrote a script or built an Automator action or whatever once, and then deployed it. In that case, it's as a service, but like these being in the shortcuts menu is a similar thing, which is like, as a Mac user, what I like is having that intelligence that maybe I built once somewhere where I can just like click on something and it happens. That's the beauty of, and that's like, whether it's Keyboard Maestro or it's something any of those kind of utilities that automatically act on things, or it's a service or a menu bar item, like you name it, Fast Scripts or Hazel or any of those, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
There's a whole gamut of different kinds of this. But in the end, as a Mac user, that's what I love, is it's a technical thing that's happening that maybe you had to build, but now it's out of sight. And like,
right.
I could open a terminal window and do this, but I don't want to do that. That's why I'm a Mac user. I want to be able to right click on something and say boop and have it do
right.
the thing, the boop thing.
Do the boop.
Yeah, that's as a Mac user, you know, I feel like that's what makes us users of a graphical user interface, is that I could open a command line. I would rather not. Thanks.
God, I spend way too much. I honestly still think when Mac OS X debuted and had the terminal in it years ago, 20 years ago now, I thought that was amazing. Like, I don't know why. For me, still enjoy doing stuff in the command line a lot, and there's probably things I could automate, but I spend a surprising amount of time in the command line.
Well, it's weird. Of us who learned Unix, especially before Mac OS X existed, it was such a great moment to have access to that stuff on your computer, because all that knowledge. I've said this before on podcasts, but like, I did not expect, when they taught me how to use VI my freshman year in college, so that I could edit documents for my college paper that were being done on a Unix system. I don't know why, but that's where they mm-hmm, were. And mm-hmm. So I had to get an account and I had to learn VI in order to make those changes. I assumed it would be something that I would need for that year and never again.
Right.
And that was the fall of 1988, friends. And the truth is, I only used it for about 2 years. And then Mac OS X came out, and I was like,
right.
Oh, and you know, Unix, I know this, right? So, and then here we are. So,
yeah, similarly, I think I built a box that I used in like college for, I think it was doing like network routing or something in our apartment, and I installed Linux on it. And then I think that was probably about a year before, around the time probably the public beta of Mac OS X came out, or a little before. And it was... Yeah, I know. I had taught myself all this stuff, and I was like, oh, I guess some of this is still useful.
Yeah. Well, when OS X came out, we did a bunch of like special things at Macworld, like, you know, subscriber promos and newsstand specials and stuff like that. And a bunch of the stuff that was in there was basically Unix stuff. And
right.
I paid Greg Noss, our friend, who it was the guy I knew who knew everything there was to know about Unix stuff, to write little articles about that stuff, because it was this whole other layer of the Mac that we didn't have previously, and it was really great. And you know, most people are never going to go into the terminal, and like I said, I would prefer, if I have to type in a terminal command and drag in a bunch of files and hit return, I would prefer to find a way to automate that so I could just click the files and say, do that thing now. But it is great to have it there. But you know, then again, Gruber linked to that article, and you wrote that article too on our site about the network speed utility that's in the latest version in Mac OS 12. And when you wrote it, I was like, that's cool. When Gruber wrote it up, I was like, all right, first off, we got there first, Gruber. Come on. And second, I thought, well, I could take this back, though, because my immediate thought was, it's nice that it's in the command line, but what if I put it in my menu bar? And that's what... and again, it's that same thing, which is like, sure, I could run this as a command line utility, or I could put it in SwiftBar and have it run every half hour and display the results. And that's what I ended up doing. So in the end, again, I dragged something out of the command line and stuck it in my menu bar because I would rather it be there.
It works. No,
it's Mac users. Awesome. That's what we do.
Put stuff in our menu bars.
Apparently. I guess that's what happens.
I have a favorite pick for that too.
Good, good, good. Love it. Perfect. Synergy. Fantastic. I don't know. I don't know what else is going on. Thank you for linking to Casey Liss's post about bad retina quality monitors for Macs, because it is amazing. There's if people are like me, and I think a lot of people are in this way, there are so many of us who, as part of this M1 transition, have been sitting here going, well, I could get that MacBook Pro, or I could get the MacBook Air, or I could get that, you know, that Mac Mini, maybe. It's like, and then you hit like, but what would I use as a monitor?
Right.
And there's not anything that really hits every scenario. And it's so clear that this is the case where Apple abandoning this market and saying, no, third parties have got it. They do not got it.
Yeah. And it's strange, as we've said for many years, because Apple is putting fantastic displays in so many of its devices. Like, they do bulk business in displays, right? Because they're buying displays for iPads and iMacs and those new ones on the MacBook Pro that are so fancy. And you sit there thinking, like, how hard would it be to put this in an external chassis and sell it to people? Because people will buy it. I mean, and they always charge a premium for their monitors, right? Like, they were good, but, like, you know, it was like those cinema display. I remember the cinema and Thunderbolt displays. They cost like $900,000, which was expensive at the time. And they were good, but I don't think at that point they were as far ahead of the competition as the stuff they're buying now is. Like, I think their display technology now is basically second to none in that market. And it's weird that that is the point at which they've decided this isn't a product. This isn't a product. It's a part of another product. Like, it is a peculiar decision, and especially doubly so once they released the Pro Display XDR, at which point they're like, well, it's a $6,000 product.
Yeah.
And you're like, is it? Is it? Because you knock that price down to $1,000 for an honor that's not as nice, but is still comparable with what you're putting in your iMac, say, and you will get a lot of takers.
Yeah, at this point, it's funny that the failure of the rest of the industry to support Mac users, has sort of proven the point that Apple, not only is there an opportunity here for Apple to sell monitors and make a lot of money on it, honestly, they will be profitable, but nobody else is going to look out for Mac users. And right. Honestly, it makes it devalues Apple's products to not have whether it's from a third party or not. Like, originally they're like, oh, this LG thing, but, you know, the LG is really mediocre. Mediocre to bad, but some people say it's fine, ultra fine. But it hurts. It's got to hurt. Like, every Mac Mini, I mean, really every non-iMac that Apple sells in an Apple store or on the online Apple store to upsell them, that buyer, on a new Apple monitor that doesn't cost $6,000 is a huge opportunity missed.
Right. Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's why I keep thinking it's inevitable, and I'm frustrated it hasn't happened yet, but I'm not. I thought the MacBook Pro would be the perfect time for it. Who knows about the supply chain and what are monitors legacy nodes? I don't know. Maybe. But the time has to be coming when I think it will happen in 2022.
Well, I think we also thought that back in, was it just in WWDC or was it earlier the year when they talked about the iPad being able to connect to external displays? We're
right.
Like, oh,
seemed logical. And that's possible too. Is that possible that they want to have an iPad OS announcement, whether it's midstream or it's a new version that has proper external display support, that they want that to be part of the story? But I thought the MacBook Pro was the perfect launch point,
sure.
And it's not here.
I I wondered if part of it was like this: the monitor on the MacBook Pro is so good that like the having to put out an external monitor that would be good but not as good as the MacBook Pro.
I don't know. I think that is part of the holdup, is that they know what the state of affairs for modern Apple displays is. This, we're entering this new generation where everything is micro LED enhanced dynamic range, mm-hmm. and Apple didn't want to put out a monitor like the XDR is in some ways, in a lot of ways, inferior mm-hmm. to the MacBook Pro display and the big iPad Pro display, right?
Right.
That
right.
all use that technology. So it may be that they have a monitor in the wings, but it's going to be that tech, which is probably also going to be in the big iMac. And that might be the ultimate. I mean, if you unwind this whole thing, ultimately they may be waiting because they don't want to premiere that display in an external display. They want to premiere it in the iMac.
Yeah, which we'll is see. Possible.
We'll
yeah.
see.
We will see.
But you're absolutely right. The last thing you want to do is bring out a monitor and it's like, yeah, it's not as good as the MacBook Pro. Sorry.
It's slightly older technology and it still costs an arm and a leg.
It doesn't have the frame rate and it doesn't have the dynamic range. Sorry. Like, yeah. I don't think they want to do that.
Yeah, once you've pushed the envelope and said, like, this is all the stuff we can do. You know, we saw this with other stuff, I think, in the MacBook Pro to a lesser extent, where people were complaining about like the older HDMI standards and stuff like that. And you're like, well, why don't you have the newest? Yeah. All the newest bells and whistles. And it's like, well,
we did.
Sorry.
We thought this product would come out 6 months ago.
Right.
We designed it longer ago than you think because of legacy nodes. I don't know.
Legacy nodes.
All right. Well, we'll be back here next Friday. Let's not talk for 2 hours on Monday, at least on Upgrade. Maybe you can just call me. We'll talk. We'll chat. But
yeah, we'll have to. Actually, I'm traveling next week, Jason.
Oh,
I'm traveling both of the next two Thursdays. I know. News time.
Thursday. What about Fridays?
But I will be away. I have to record, I think, another show next week. So I think I'll probably end up bringing a mic with me. I'm going to WorldCon, Jason. Remember WorldCon? Remember conferences? Woof.
Yeah.
Going to a conference next week. That's going to be weird.
Yeah, I'll say.
It's in Washington, D.C. So we're going to zip down for the weekend and stay with some friends who live in the area.
So you're committing to the Six Colors podcast next Friday?
I will do the Six Colors podcast. We may have to do a slight time adjustment when I sort of figure out where we are, but we'll do it on Friday.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll be back then. You got the Dan Morin guarantee, everybody.
I said it.
But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.